Posing Challenges to Women's Rights. By Sivananthi Thanenthiran. Executive Director, Aero. Email, shiva@aero.org.my. Twitter @SivananthiT. We did not anticipate that when the Cairo and Beijing Agendas 1 reached fruition, we would see a resurgence of religious extremism at national, regional, and global levels and across borders. The onslaught has meant that many of the rights we thought would be achieved and concretest for women and girls are under renewed threat. The assault on rights has been intense, and, though commonly referred to as religious fundamentalism, is intertwined with other political trends which can be best described as ethno-religious nationalism. These three terms, nationalism, ethnicity, and religion, are by and large powerful political and patriarchal concepts. It is useful for us to define these terms to fully understand what the phenomena represents. Nationalism is a concept which is based on communal identification with the nation, and based on this identification espouses sovereignty, self-determination, and self-governance. Ethnicity refers to an identity, usually inherited, based on a shared descent, culture, language, and customs. Ethno-nationalism is a form of nationalism based on ethnicity and taken to the most extreme, that citizenship in a state should be limited to one ethnic or cultural group. Religion encompasses beliefs, rituals, texts, and worldviews about the transcendental, and are used as identity differentiators. Ethnicity is often connoted with a common religion, and religious nationalism is when religion is a defining contributor to the national identity, along with ethnicity, language, and culture. Ethno-religious nationalism is then a beast, which is fueled by both ethnic and religious identity, and which reinforces that the political legitimacy of the state is primarily derived from adherence to religious doctrines. Ethno-religious nationalism seeks to fuse the state, geographical territory, culture, and religious text, and impose and define it through bodies. Ethno-religious nationalism seeks to fuse the state, geographical territory, culture, and religious text, and impose and define it through bodies. This is what makes the current political environment so challenging for those of us working on women's rights, sexual and reproductive rights, and with human rights frameworks. It is like battling the Hydra, when having chopped off one head, to emerge in its place. This is what makes the current political environment so challenging for those of us working on women's rights, sexual and reproductive rights, and with human rights frameworks. It is like battling the Hydra, when having chopped off one head, to emerge in its place. However, for us to fight this beast, we must first understand it, and the conditions that have produced it. In the past, countries professed secular democracy as the way ahead, but, today, nations are adopting national religions in order to propel themselves in the 21st century. Hence, a Buddhist Sri Lanka, a Christian America, a Hindu India, and a Muslim Turkey. In a number of countries, the national religion is affiliated, most often, with a dominant, majority, racial or ethnic group. The strident call of these three groups is a return to majoritarian to patriarchal politics guised under democracy. Equality of women, of citizens who belong to ethnic and religious minorities, and of sexual minorities, and acceptance of diversity are all singled out as threats to the majority. Interestingly, this phenomenon is apparent across continents, races, and religions. Though religion is a crucial part of the phenomenon, it is not the only part. Rising poverty, deep inequalities and inequities, lack of access to opportunities and resources, poor governance, and low levels of education are the grounds that give birth to ethno-nationalist discourse. The arguments used are simplistic. The first is the easy identification of the other as the one who takes away resources and opportunities and causes poverty and inequality. The second is that pluralism and liberalism are ideologies which grant equal rights to the other, and empower the other over the majority. The third is that a strong state with majoritarian politics, based on religious values, will govern well and distribute resources and opportunities more equitably amongst the majority. The last, of course, is that those who profess liberalism and pluralism, most often, feminists and LGBTQ activists, stand in the way of this religious, majoritarian, ethno-nationalist state and its success. As such, they are considered the enemy of the state. They also become the other. The othering spills over to different groups over different issues. These simplistic arguments are appealing, easily absorbed, and regurgitated. However, the ethno-national religious framework provides no solutions to rising poverty, inequality, and instability both nationally and globally. Neither does it challenge economic policies, specifically neoliberal economic ones, such as privatization, fiscal austerity, deregulation, free trade, and reduction in the role of government in providing social welfare services, which continue deepening poverty, inequalities, and inequities. The ethno-national religious framework provides no solutions to rising poverty, inequality, and instability both nationally and globally. Neither does it challenge economic policies, specifically neoliberal economic ones, such as privatization, fiscal austerity, deregulation, free trade, and reduction in the role of government in providing social welfare services, which continue deepening poverty, inequalities, and inequities. Debates on countering the limitations placed on women's rights, especially our sexual and reproductive rights, on the basis of religion come from two perspectives. One is to work within the framework of religion, and promote fairer, less discriminatory interpretations, which facilitate rights, and vice versa. Indeed, some partners and faith-based organizations have found success with such strategies. In Maldives, Arrow's partner Society for Health Education, SHE3, worked with progressive religious scholars in order to pass a FATWA4, which makes abortion available. These scholars quoted verses from the Hadith 5 which supported circumstances where abortion was permissible. They also were able to quote verses, which were progressive on different fronts, against intimate partner violence and marital rape, and were pro-contraception. This was strategic and successful, especially in the case of Maldives, where by and large there was a homogeneous understanding of Islam. Much of the work on providing access to contraception and family planning in Muslim countries, such as Indonesia and Pakistan, utilizes similar strategies of progressive interpretations, which help build the case for FOR birth spacing. This has also worked in countries like Senegal, with the issue of female genital mutilation. The second perspective is to work within a secular framework, which recognizes and promotes equality of women. In Morocco, our partner, the Association Marocaine de Planification Familiale, AMPF, also worked on access to safe abortion. 6. Interestingly enough, the Maliki school, whose interpretations are considered the strictest and most rigid, and which expressly forbids abortion, is the leading school of Islamic thought in Morocco. However, the partner and stakeholders were able to use social welfare arguments in order to enable access to safe abortion. The stakeholders were able to revise the existing law to allow for abortion in the case of rape, incest, and fetal malformation. This strategy was successful in Morocco, which is a constitutional monarchy wherein the social welfare arguments appealed to and convinced the progressive king, and, by and large, still remains largely secular. Working within the secular framework allows activists and advocates to advance concepts of women's bodily autonomy, bodily integrity, rights, and choice. Working within religious frameworks does place some limitations. For example, religious leaders do not universally endorse limiting births when promoting access to contraception and family planning, providing access to contraception and comprehensive sexuality education for unmarried young people, in ending child early and forced marriages, as well as non-discrimination for persons of diverse sexual orientation and gender identities and expressions. This despite the existence of liberal interpretations across all religions to support these issues. The question then remains, why are liberal interpretations not used more often and accepted more widely? This is primarily because religious interpretation does not occur in a vacuum, and in consultation with books and scholars alone. There are 5 underlying challenges to mainstreaming progressive religious interpretations. The first challenge is that in a number of countries, there is a strong, ethno-nationalist discourse, which provides the context for the religious interpretation. In Sri Lanka, the Women and Media Collective's Research 7 shows that the last political regime of Rajapakse was strongly affiliated with the rise of the Bodhu Bolo Sena, BBS, a right-wing group led by Buddhist monks. The BBS discourse on contraception and family planning was based on majoritarian politics and how international organizations, such as Marie Stopes International and SAI, had the agenda of making Sinhalese women infertile and thus reducing the Sinhala Buddhist population. At the same time, in order to preserve Sri Lanka as a Buddhist country, there was also discourse that emerged on controlling the Muslim population, by limiting to 2 children per couple. This premise of majoritarian politics and perpetuating a majority race hinders progressive views from emerging and finding acceptance within society. The second challenge for progressive interpretations to find root is that in a number of countries, religion is used as a source of identity politics. The research in India by the Rural Women's Social Education Center 8 brings up stories of how mixed marriages, marriages between people of different religions, were discouraged and prohibited, sometimes with great pressure, even violence, and were especially exerted on the women. In Myanmar, the government also passed a law prohibiting mixed marriages. 9 And in Malaysia, in order to marry a Muslim, one has to convert to Islam. 10 In these cases, autonomy to choose one's partner falls prey to the idea of a homogeneous identity for the individual, the family, and the community. Mixed marriages are prohibited, discouraged, or penalized in 5 ethno-religious state because they threaten the traditional family, which is the key site of social reproduction and primary socialization. The third challenge is that rigid, limiting interpretations pertaining to sexual and reproductive rights are strongest in the context of poverty. The research from Bangladesh 11, Indonesia 12, and Pakistan 13 show that the poor, rural, lesser educated communities were located further away from the locus of power and development, and had less access to economic, educational, health, and social resources. In these power and resource scarce settings, the communities were very often under the control of community leaders, including religious leaders and dominant men. These community leaders used both gender and religion in order to impose rather than disrupt social hierarchies. Because these communities had less access to both education, transport, and technology, the availability of progressive interpretations, and a broader social system which supported different progressive interpretations did not exist. In these cases, programs which worked with religious leaders tend to reinforce gender power imbalances rather than to empower women to make decisions about their bodies and their health. Rigid, limiting interpretations pertaining to sexual and reproductive rights are strongest in the context of poverty. The research from Bangladesh, Indonesia, and Pakistan show that the poor, rural, lesser educated communities were located further away from the locus of power and development, and had less access to economic, educational, health, and social resources. The fourth challenge was the rapid export of extremist interpretations across borders, fueled by specific religious groups. In Islam, it was the emergence of strong Wahhabi/Salaf schools of thought that posed as the ideal interpretation of Islam with their extreme limitations on women's roles and women's rights. In Christianity, it was the export of American evangelical churches professing an anti-contraception, anti-abortion, and anti-gay agenda. 14 The conscious exporting of religious beliefs, along with social welfare aid across countries, undermine the natural ability of societies to create laws and religious interpretations freely, and which was reflective of their own cultures and their own lived realities. 15 Those who exported these religious interpretations sought to oust secular, human rights, and women's rights frameworks as a threat to enabling adherence to the true faith. The last challenge is that religion has become institutionalized in many countries. There are not only churches, mosques, and temples with priests, ustads/ustads, and monks, and texts, there are religious bodies, religious schools, religious health services, religious authorities, and religious courts, which embody, implement, and carry out actions based on these interpretations. There is an entire social 16, economic 17, and legal 18 system premised on religion, which espouses separation, purity, ritual, and fundamentalism, and which creates the necessity to work on institutional reform and not only enabling progressive interpretations. Through the years, rights-based activists within the Lutheran churches have been able to move forward and endorse sexual and reproductive rights as institutions rather than as individual religious leaders. The work of creating and promoting progressive interpretations with religious leaders must go hand in hand with strengthening and reinforcing the bodily autonomy and integrity and rights of women. 6. While championing freedom of religion, we need to equally champion freedom from religion. There needs be equal investment, especially in young democracies, of strengthening democratic institutions, which are able to check the power and influence of religious institutions and provide redressal when rights are violated or trespassed. Coupled with poor governance is the culture of impunity, and in all of these countries, despite the state affiliation with religion, there has been unchecked corruption at all levels of government. Hence, there needs be greater interrogation whether religion is utilized by the powerful people to cloak their actions in religiosity and distract the people from the larger issues of development, governance, and accountability. Moreover, if we want during these tumultuous times to endeavor to move towards equality, freedom, and non-discrimination, we need to form allies across all progressive movements, which work across the boundaries of race, religion, and gender, and provide a strong, united front which is able to challenge the hegemony of ethno-religious nationalism.